Yes, this is starting year 39 of the Talk Shop.
Today is the 39th year.
Yeah, it was April 5th is when it started in 1982. Oh, well, you know what we do. We do what we have to deal with, right?
Work with what you can get.
Yeah, but I will tell you that Ray Shipley, however, was on during the first week. So we go back with EPD just a little bit. I know. Big deal, right?
Well, I'm about to turn 50 in a week.
Yeah, well, way to go. Way to go. All right, so are you ready for our why do we say that or ever wonder why? Our question of the morning.
Go ahead.
Okay. Ever wonder why some china is called bone china?
I can say I have not wondered that. Can I theorize? Could it have been made out of ivory or some type of bone?
Because you're there. Because powdered animal bone is mixed with the clay used to make this kind of china to give it a special translucency, strength, and whiteness. You're right. See, you're smarter than people think you are. You must have had a really long Easter weekend, huh?
Long enough.
Yeah. Understood. So what's out there? Heard some funny stuff going on over in Arcata, and certainly that's an issue that Brian and his folks have to deal with. Are you seeing any differences this spring than from previous springs?
You know, so that's an interesting topic, Brian. I was just reading another article, and the major chiefs associations released some data that violent crime and gun crime is up exponentially higher across a great many of the major cities in the country through this past year. They're obviously hesitant to attribute any one thing to that rise over a one-year period, such as COVID-19 or some of the defunding movements, though those have been cited. The cities that substantially cut police budgets have seen almost universally a very high increase in crime.
Are any of those jurisdictions, Steve, now refunding back? I mean, do you have a chance to kind of see what, okay, it went down,
yes,
and now here comes the money coming back in, and the impact of that is blank?
Well, it's too early to show the impact, but yes, I have read that several cities have had to release emergency fundings or walk back some of the decisions that were made, again, because they weren't thought out. They were knee-jerk emotional reactions without the infrastructure in place to absorb the changes, and now many of these communities are basically reaping the negative consequences of these kind of across-the-board changes that were not implemented thoughtfully.
Now, that was never contemplated in Eureka, was it?
I don't believe so at any significant level, and part of that, two things to consider. One is the state of our budget going into this fiscal year, so we're talking last spring, was obviously very dire, and so the city had to make very steep cuts, somewhere around 12.5% citywide, and EPD absorbed about 10% of that, even though efforts were made to try to spare the impacts as much as possible so we can maintain basic services. But those, so we kind of were almost, in one sense, had reduced funding significantly just through that process. But in terms of reimagining the police or the social services element, the city has been well above many of our similar-sized, fellow jurisdictions with what we've been doing for the last several years now with the Uplift Eureka program and our Community Safety Engagement Team, or CSET, along with the Mobile Intervention and Services Team program. So we're already collaborating and co-responding with mental health and social service providers, community stakeholders, nonprofits, and all of that in terms of addressing the homeless and mentally ill and the addicted on the street.
Why do I feel like this is a budget hearing?
The city has a plan, and we certainly are committed to continual improvement. You can't just rest on your laurels. There's too much work to be done, and we know that there's a lot of room for growth and improvement. But the city's got a framework that we're excited about, that we're seeing some positive results that put us above many of our peers again. And so while we all acknowledge that there's a lot of work to remain to be done, we believe that we have a foundation that's going to help position us for the future well, and continue to make some progress
now
through these programs.
How are you going to judge, or what are the benchmarks you have for positive results? You can't say more bad guys in jail, because right now, at least from what the sheriff said last Thursday, that judges aren't sentencing for misdemeanors. Okay, so you can't
state,
use that one.
State law and trends. Yeah, it's state, the way the states, I mean, look at what Oregon decriminalizing, drug possession. I mean,
right,
even California's
right.
had a decided shift away from incarceration. And so, we need to adjust with these changing times as well. I would start with changed lives, as cliche as it sounds. These stories that are coming out of people that have got out of hopelessness and deep addiction and homelessness and into stable housing, jobs, that's one of the most powerful metrics. But also what we'll hope to see over time is a reduction in the number of mentally ill and homeless, on the streets in crisis. And, that's a moving target, because the underlying causal factors continue not to be addressed nationwide. And then we need to get upstream of those problems to truly begin to measurably reduce, those experiencing homelessness. But the more that we can make progress here locally and begin to see in the numbers that are being housed and assisted off the street and into, again, a more safe, healthy, and stable environment, that would be one of those important benchmarks.
KINS, News and Information Time, as if he was in the studio, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Steve, before the break, you talked about how you're going to judge the positive direction or positive impact of some of the actions that are being taken either by EPD specifically or by law enforcement in general. And you mentioned changing lives. One of the things that my initial thought was is if people are getting squared up and ready for the remainder of their life as a contributing factor to society, a lot of those folks aren't from the area, so you'll never know that they got their act together. So how do you follow those people to get that, or would it just be kind of street intuition?
That's this one of the dynamics of this profession is so many times you don't even realize or get to see the true end story of a life that an officer or dispatcher has intersected with. I've had people come up 10 years later and say, hey, look, you may not remember me or this case, but, you responded to this situation, when I was 21 years old, and maybe even in one case, you know, you arrested me, but the way that you handled it and what happened afterwards changed my life, and that was the catalyst for that. So you don't always get to see the outcome. You know, you look at what we do as a profession, we don't get the pleasure, for the most part, of running around to all the joyous occasions that occur in the city. They don't call us for the good news. They call us for the tragedy, for, you know, the crisis, for the deaths, for the shootings, for the, you know, the people in the mental health crisis or an overdose and things like that. And so that's just kind of the reality of what we have to do. And that has its own toll that it takes, you know, on the officers and dispatchers in particular, that every day incessantly are dealing with these kind of problems. Every now and then you get moments to celebrate, and we cherish those the same way that someone that's dying of thirst in a desert gets a fresh glass of water, so to speak, and they kind of refuel us and give us the energy to continue, because if not us, who? If not the doctors and nurses in the emergency room that, again, are the point of the crisis care, then who else is going to be there? And so it takes a special kind of person to be able to be in these kind of professions, police, fire, emergency medicine, you know, and we could probably name a half dozen others at least right now where people are right out there, you know, on the edge.
Well, it sounds very comparable to teachers also. You don't know, but 25 years later, something happens or somebody says something. Yeah, okay,
yeah,
that's kind of fun.
Somewhat little known fact, but before I became a cop, I actually stayed the next year in college in the teacher education program, got my credential, went through student teaching, and then I met a fluent fifth grade class and realized that I needed to make some changes in my life. I wanted to do something that was less stressful and more safe, so I became a cop.
Yeah. All of a sudden, you understood the reason for some of the training in the law enforcement end, huh?
Yeah, teachers are saints.
Oh, the other thing that you had mentioned was a reduction of mentally ill out on the street, and that's a challenge. Obviously, I think most everybody has become aware that mental health clinicians are tough to come by. Everybody's trying to scramble and find those folks. Now we've got police or law enforcement agencies wanting to hire and have those ride-alongs and special, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the reduction of mentally ill has got to be as challenging as any of the other aspects on your list, because there really is nowhere for these folks to go that truly do need the help.
They need, you know, intensive intervention and case management and supportive services. And we've done two large-scale homeless surveys here in Eureka in the last 3.5 years, and over 50% of the homeless population consistently has been identified as having significant mental illness. The addiction rates are also way up there. In fact, I think I'm underquoting the numbers, but it's a substantial problem. And, you know, the city of Eureka has been working with co-response type of model since 2015, one of the first cities to do so in the country, not the first, but in that kind of you know, upper tier, so to speak. Now city after city is starting to implement these programs in various fashions. I just read about several more this morning on a news brief, because that's becoming, you know, the future. People look at models like Cahoots in Eugene, Oregon, which isn't going to be a fit for everyone, but they've had some success with that program. Eureka is building its own scaled model of a co-response program. We've already had the mental health clinicians and caseworkers paired with officers part-time for the last 5 years or so, but now we're looking at how can we introduce emergency medical element to it, and a more permanent type of mental health assistance as part of the program to kind of expand beyond what we've been doing the last few years. And so that is actively being worked on.
Can that come to a working solution without having any state mental health facilities?
Well, this is, again, more geared because we don't have control over the local, you know, mental health, you know, hospitals or, you know, SMPRVIRNs or crisis management units. You know, that's completely funded through, state funding, and goes to the county, and the county has a responsibility for managing those type of programs. And there's not enough, anywhere near enough in the state. You know, in fact, up in our region, I think we have one of the only ones.
Yeah, I know. It's so, really, really tough sledding there. It's also 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Baywood Golf and Country Club. Steve, before the break, you were kind of rocking and rolling there a little bit about how some of the different challenges that are out there, particularly with mental health. And it's, it's tough not to be sympathetic, almost to a fault, because going back in the archives, as Shipley used to say, there for the grace of God go I, there but for the grace of God go I. Okay, there we go. I got all the words in there. And you never know what causes somebody to step across the line and try that, that starts to lead them to that position. But on the other hand, you look at the cost to society and to all the other citizens in the community, and then you've got case law and. What do you think it's going to look like in 5 or 10 years?
That's a great question, Brian, and I don't know. There's certainly a nationwide push to try to begin to take some of the burden off of law enforcement's shoulders as being the first and only responder to crises in the field. I don't foresee that ever completely changing, not only as a function of limited resources, but, there's going to be – these situations are often tense and dangerous. There may be weapons and violence involved. That will always require an officer. But for the others where that's not the case, where maybe law enforcement doesn't need to respond at all, or we can at least co-respond, I think that's what you're going to see, is that trend solidify and hopefully more funding and resources available. I think it's going to be difficult to have 24/7 coverage for most jurisdictions in terms of mental health response, or mental health response at the speed that it needs to occur, because really it's law enforcement that's on 24/7, 365 with rapid response. It's what we do, and it's going to be very difficult to completely divorce that from the equation, but that shift needs to begin to take place.
In the old days, years ago, if somebody was acting out, either you guys already knew who the player was, or it was brought on by meth or something along those lines. Do you still see that now as kind of the two options, or are there so many different other reasons why people act out to the level of either violence or to get your guys' attention?
Well, I think that's a multifaceted problem. On one hand, it's a lack of sufficient mental health resources in the kind of intensive case management, which can include involuntary or certainly more structured residential type of programs. You're going to see the impacts of that out in the real world on the street, but you can't discount the drug-related issue. And that's often one of the arguments at the ground level is this person's crises, the reason that they're acting out the way that they are, is it primarily a mental health issue, or is it the methamphetamine or other illicit substance that they just use? And sometimes a debate occurs over that amongst medical and mental health and law enforcement professionals, because drug use certainly exasperates mental health issues and vice versa. And they're an ugly combination that only makes the situation worse. And so a cop's often dealing with both, not just the mental illness aspect, but also the effects of the influence of a central nervous system stimulant, a hallucinogenic, those kind of things that can create an exceedingly complex issue to have to deal with.
Are you seeing any trends since Oregon has decriminalized possession? Are you feeling it yet?
No, I don't have any data on that yet.
No, but what does your police gut say?
You know, it's going to be hard to say, because California, while we haven't went that far, you know, we did reduce simple possession from a felony to a misdemeanor. And then you look at the current state of who's going to jail or prison and how long they're being held there. And in many ways, we've kind of almost done the same thing already, just a different path.
Just not at the ballot box.
So you certainly see more people using more openly now than we did in the past, as consequences were reduced, but that's only one piece of the equation.
Are you seeing more folks? Well, you know what? We'll just kind of save this, that whole topic here for the next segment. KINS, now I'm on a roll. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:41.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Watson. Steve, have you seen, experienced, or are the troops talking anything about the impact of the legalization of marijuana on driving? Have you seen more reports of people driving under the influence or just illegal driving, you know, whether their patterns are... whether there's a cloud of smoke inside the vehicle or not, have you seen any change?
I don't have any solid data on that yet, and I don't know that the state of California has any either. I do know that you look at some states that preceded us in legalization, like Colorado, also some data out of Washington, for instance. Last I looked at it a while back, they had seen an increase in serious or fatal traffic collisions since legalization, and an increase in marijuana-related DUIs and collisions. Whether that has continued to hold, I'm not sure. I can tell you, as a county resident, I see more people smoking marijuana in their vehicles now. Let's say I'm running an errand at a grocery store on the weekend. I've even confronted people off duty about it, quite frankly, because it's no different than chugging a bottle, you know, of an alcoholic beverage or a beer in your car. It's against the law. It's about around the same level of penalty as an open container or consumption of alcohol in the vehicle. And a lot of people don't realize that. It's also illegal to consume in public, period, absent an ordinance that allows it. It's a violation of state law. So you can't just light up anywhere you want when you're walking around on a public sidewalk.
I suppose it's
tough. People do.
I would suspect it's probably tough to bust somebody for eating a gummy bear, though.
That would be very difficult, certainly, yes. If it's an edible that looks like candy. You know, when you're smoking it, you know, just like cigarette smoke, it's very noticeable and draws attention.
Right.
And also, obviously, it's, a lot of people don't appreciate either tobacco smoke or cannabis smoke. You know, if they could choose not to have to breathe it in.
Yeah, either way. Have there been more, I guess it would be overdoses, you know, with some of the edibles or being able to purchase in that form? Have you seen any impact along those lines?
You know, I don't have data on that one. It's certainly not a problem on my radar, as opposed to like the opioid overdoses that we continue to deal with. We just had another fatal one late last week in the city that our officers responded to and attempted to save a life by administering Narcan unsuccessfully. It was too late. We do have, we're getting close to 30 Narcan incidences where our officers, since we started our program, where officers have administered Narcan, and we have, I want to say it's like around 24 saves.
Really?
In that period.
That's good. Now, what is the response from these folks when they do get saved? Do they come back with an attitude, or do you get a thanks for helping me?
I don't think you get a thanks for helping me right away. Some cases you do get people that are agitated because they came out of, you know, what they thought was a better place, and suddenly they've lost their high and they're angry, they're disoriented. That can be kind of a natural part of that process.
Really, even if they get to that, even if they go to that extent where they're, you know, you guys are having to respond to save their life, they're still wanting that other thing?
Oh yeah, that doesn't go away just the moment that, you know, they're brought back from the brink of death. You know, the addiction and the physical and the psychological need still exists.
Wow.
So we had we've administered Narcan to 28 different patients and had 24 survive the overdose events and 4 that did not. And this is since March 1st of 2019 when we rolled out our Narcan program. So I'm pretty proud of that. You know, it's tragic, the underlying conditions that result in someone abusing controlled substances to the point that their life is on the line. But let's be real, it's going to happen anyways. They're human beings. They deserve dignity. You know, we have to do what we can to save them. And you hope someday maybe they recover and they go on to live productive lives. But you can't, really can't control that part. But 28 times with 24 survivals, you know, I think that's, you know, that's both tragic and also something that we're proud of.
Now, what, you know, silly old uninformed me, what triggers the Narcan? What kind of drug is that the balancer or the neutralizer for?
Opioids like fentanyl and heroin, you know, and so it's very effective in countering that as long as you're not too late. So the officers are trained with additional first aid, CPR, how to recognize the symptoms. Narcan's very safe to administer, so you really can't hurt somebody. You know, it's almost like a when in doubt, provided that there are certain signs, you know, that are met in terms of the administration. There's also contraindications when it's not going to work as well. It's not going to bring someone that's truly dead with no pulse rate and not breathing back because you can't circulate it in the system. But, you know, again, they've had 28 individuals that they've administered to. Actually, one of those they administered two separate occasions.